While my presentation is loading. So I will be talking to you today about sexual behaviors among a sample of what I say is over 4,000 WSW. In fact, it's a little over 3,000. If anybody's upset by this and wants to leave the room right now, I understand where you'd be infuriated, but I'll give you my reasons for those inclusion criteria in a little bit later. I have no conflicts of interest to disclose, at least not financial ones. I'm invested in women's health. Okay. So as we all know, women who have sex with women are often categorized as a sexual minority. That is because they represent a minority of the population, but they are a sizable minority. They represent between 5 to 17% of women, depending on the sample that you look at and the way you define sex with other women, so whether you define it as genital contact or something other than that. These women are a group of women who should be studied because, despite popular perceptions, there is documented transmission of TRIC, genital herpes, HPV, and HIV between women. In fact, BV, so bacterial vaginosis rates, are actually higher amongst women who have sex with women than women who only have sex with men, so WSM. But how are STIs transmitted between women? Well, we can turn to the CDC guidelines to kind of understand how STIs might be transmitted. So what does the CDC say? Well, they say that it may be between skin-to-skin contact, mouth-to-vagina, vaginal fluids, menstrual blood, and sharing sex toys. And they also give a list of other things that would put women at risk for STIs, including sex with men, sharing needles, and bisexual women who have sex with men. So this is supposed to be recommendations on women who have sex with women and how to reduce their STI risk. So, if a woman's having sex with women and she wants to keep herself safe, and she goes to the CDC website, what does she see? Well, in order to practice safer sex, you should get tested for STIs, you should practice methods to reduce the chances of sharing vaginal fluid, semen, or blood, you should use condoms on sex toys, and oral sex with men and women can spread STIs. So this is the information that a woman would get, or a provider, let's say the provider wanted to give that information to a woman who was having sex with women. Well, what's wrong with these guidelines? There's nothing really wrong with them, per se, right? They're completely accurate, right? But they're not very detailed, right? So first of all, they're based upon kind of this heterosexual model of risk. It keeps coming back to women who have sex with women should be concerned about STIs because they engage in sexual behavior with men. So what about women who are just engaging in sexual behavior with other women? What should they do? Well, the suggestions and examples they give is, well, you should stay away from skin-to-skin contact. Well, what does that mean for me? How do I stay away from skin-to-skin contact? Should I just not engage in sexual behavior? There aren't really any concrete examples or suggestions for women who are engaging in sex with women. And this isn't CDC's fault. It's because we have very little knowledge about the behavioral mode of STI transmission. We know very little about the actual sexual behaviors that women are engaging in with other women. So there's national estimates. Both within Britain and within the US, we have national prevalence data on women's sexual behavior with other women. So we have data on receptive and active, oral intercourse, genital contact, and vibrator use. But those are all clearly very select behaviors, right? Those do not include all behaviors that women may engage in with other women. And they're also based upon proportionally small sample sizes. So yes, in all, the nationally representative sample is quite large, but the number of women who engage in sexual behavior with other women are the 5 to 16.8% that I talked about in the beginning of this talk. There are also larger studies which have focused exclusively on WSW, and they've asked women about the sexual behaviors they've engaged in. However, those studies oftentimes either use subjective measurements for those behaviors. So they say, have you engaged in this behavior? And they give them options that include sometimes, frequently, somewhat. And as we all know, frequently for one person in this room could be, you know, twice a day, and frequently for another person in this room could be twice a year. So assessing behavior in that way doesn't actually give you data about the amount of times they're engaging in whichever that behavior that is. They also oftentimes assess toys as kind of one category, right? So do you use toys? But they don't tease it apart between the different types of toys that women may be using, such as vibrators, dildos, butt plugs, anal beads, and we're going to talk about all of that a little bit later, right? And those are important to think about because for risk reasons, but also just to kind of understand what women are doing in the bedroom and the context in which they're using those toys. So our sexual risk estimates have been based upon what we know about women's sexual behavior in the past. Right? So we tell women to use a dental dam during cunnilingus, when in fact there may be riskier behavior that they're engaging in, where they may be passing infected cervicovaginal secretions from one to another. And we'll talk about some of those behaviors in just a bit. We also, like as I mentioned before, toy use has been measured just by asking whether or not they use a toy, but they're not necessarily assessing the context in which they're using the toy, the way they're using the toy, the type of partner they're using the toy with, whether they're using a barrier on the toy. So there's a lot of different factors that can play into whether or not toy use is risky. So in the present study, we wanted to describe women's sexual behavior with other women, investigate a few select predictors of sexual behavior. I'm not going to go into all of them. And explore some of the safer sex strategy rates reported by WSW, and some of these ones that we haven't really explored in the past today. So we distributed this web-based survey globally. It was in English, so clearly that was limiting for many women since this was a global study. So women did have to speak English. It didn't have to be their primary language, but they did have to be able to understand the questions. They all indicated that they were over the age of 18, and we were really broad in who we invited to participate in the study. It was women who have experienced or currently experience sexual attraction, desire, affection, intentions towards, or sexual behavior with other women. So we really wanted anybody and everybody who was interested in participating, who had thought about sexual behavior, or who had engaged in sexual behavior in this larger study. I'll talk about this smaller sample in just a second. So we recruited through personal social networks, things like Facebook, colleagues, friends, listservs. We also posted on discussion forums. There's a few examples of some of the websites that we posted on where we got a really positive response, and actually a lot of dialogue started on those discussion forums. We also partnered with Gaydar Girls, which is a large website that is European-based for women who are interested in meeting other women. And they both put the study link on their webpage and sent the message to their members. And we also had some help from the media, both online and in print magazines. These are some examples of the different online and print magazines that there were. The print magazines were distributed for free in different bars and cafes around the UK. And one more, which I like. For some reason, this one particular kind of conservative website found this study and picked it up and decided to promote it, thinking that it would have the opposite effect. They wanted people to be outraged that people were studying women's sex with women, when in fact, I don't know that you can read it, but it really had the opposite effect, where people said things like, oh great, how do I participate? What can I do? And our numbers actually jumped when they posted this. So this actually has an interesting subset of kind of conservative women, too. And I looked at the numbers, and it wasn't people just kind of messing around with the data. It looked about the same as the other women. So backfired on them, but really worked out well for us. So the survey took approximately 20 minutes, give or take, on how much sexual behavior they'd engaged in the past. The measures, we assessed a variety of sexual health and wellness constructs. I won't go into all of them today. And the sexual behavior measures were adapted from the National Survey of Sexual Health and Behavior, which my study team recently put out, and it was so we can compare these to these national estimates of men and women's sexual behavior. Obviously, some of the items we had to adapt from the NSSHB because that was primarily focused towards heterosexual men and women. Upon completion of the study, all participants received a coupon code for a store with bath products and different types of products that the women may enjoy. So this is just a brief slide that kind of gives you the overall sample. As you can see, it was primarily U.S. and European based, but we did have women in other areas as well. So this just gives you a quick kind of breakdown. I don't want to go into detail because I'm actually not giving you data on all of these women. But I did want to give you this slide in order to show you why I chose the places that I did to include data from. So the U.S., the U.K., Canada, and Australia made up the largest percentage of the data from our women. And we decided that these women would be similar enough culturally that we could kind of include them in this one study today. The other women are definitely important, and we plan on looking at them, but we wanted to be more sensitive to kind of some of their cultural differences instead of lumping them in. So that's something we're still exploring. So we then further refined our sample to only women who had at least one sexual experience with another woman in the past year, which gives us a final sample of 3,100 women. The demographic characteristics, as you can see, primarily from the U.S. and the U.K., that's probably because of the way we recruited the women with both Gaydar Girls and with some of the media efforts we had in the U.S. And then the age range, women were young, partially middle-aged. We did have a few women who were over the age of 60, fairly well-educated, primarily white. Along this side of the slide, I have the number of sexual acts they engaged in within the past year. So there were a total of number of 11 different sexual acts, and I looked to see whether these sociodemographic characteristics were significant predictors of the number of sexual acts, so not specific sexual acts, but the number of sexual acts they engaged in. And letters signify significant differences, so we can see there were some differences around age, education, and race. I wanted to include this all on one slide, but it got quite large. So we also see the breakdown based upon sexual orientation, primarily lesbian, homosexual, a large sample of bisexual women. Within the full study, it was over actually 800, so it's quite a sizable sample of bisexual women. They're oftentimes a difficult community to get at. And then some pansexual women, a lot of queer women, and then there were no significant differences in the number of sexual acts they reported engaging in within the past year, and current relationship status I have here, where most women were in a relationship for over 1 year, but there or had no current sexual partners, but there is some distribution there. So these are the sexual activities, the first set of sexual activities. I'm separating the behaviors and the toys out, not because I don't think that they represent women's entire sexual repertoire and that they should be considered together, but it made the slide quite large if I wanted to do that. So these are kind of the definitions that we gave the women of these various behaviors. So if some of the names look unfamiliar to you, that's because we kind of had to come up with some of these names because there aren't these names that already exist in the literature. So we have genital rubbing, which is kind of rubbing of the external genitals, vaginal fingering, which is we defined as maybe three or fewer fingers, but we also gave them that term fingering so that way they could kind of define it themselves. Fisting, which we defined as four or more fingers. I know that seems somewhat arbitrary, but we wanted to give women something to kind of decide whether or not it is fisting, but we also included the word fisting in there for women. Cunnilingus, of course. And then genital scissoring, which is genital on genital rubbing. Again, that's a term we decided to come up with because we thought it kind of provided an image of what that might be as opposed to genital rubbing because those two seem to be very confusing when reading through it. So these are a lot of different numbers, but I want you to focus on the past year numbers because I think that they're the most meaningful. What we see are, and these were only women who had engaged in at least one sexual event with another woman in the past year. So of women who engage in sexual behavior with other women, what are they doing is the question here. And we see that they're doing a lot of different things. They have a very diverse sexual repertoire. So it's some of the things that we've talked about that we've expected that we've read about in the literature before. But there's also things like genital scissoring, which we haven't really discussed, that we find the rates are over 80% for women to have reported within the past year, over 90% within their lifetime. That vaginal fisting is a little bit lower, but still it's a very sizable minority of women. Next, we asked about their toy use, vibrator use, non-vibrating, double dildo use, non-vibrating strap-on use, butt plug and anal beads. So again, I want you to focus on the past year. And we see that a sizable number of women are using different types of toys within the past year. So over 50% have used a vibrator during with a partner. These are all with a female sexual partner. And so this just gives you an idea of their overall sexual repertoire, just to show you how many behaviors they're actually engaging in. We analyzed the data based upon age to see whether there were differences types of behaviors based upon age, and we found that younger women were actually engaging in kind of less insertive behaviors, where older women were reporting more diverse behaviors and more insertive behaviors. Women who were in relationships were reporting just more behaviors, more diverse behaviors. And finally, thinking about safer sex strategies, whether or not, so this is only for women who reported that they and their partner used the vibrator for the vibrator questions or the dildo for the dildo questions, and they both used it vaginally, so either on their external vulva or whether they inserted it vaginally. And for these women, we see that most of them report cleaning it before or after. However, they're much less likely to reporting having used a condom on the toy. And very few report ever using a barrier during genital scissoring. So again, during ungenital genital rubbing, very few report using a barrier during that act. So we find that women have very diverse sexual repertoires. So thinking back to some of those earlier recommendations, maybe some of those wouldn't work. We can't really use that heterosexual model of risk. These women are engaging in a lot of diverse behaviors. But they're not necessarily engaging in a lot of the a lot of barrier use, either during genital scissoring or during use with toys. And although we don't know exactly the reason for this, this wasn't a study to assess the reasons, we do know that many women perceive themselves to be at low risk when they're engaging in sexual behavior with other women. So what we recommend is, and part of the reason why women may perceive themselves to be at such low risk, is because there are no products that are specifically designed for their sexual behaviors. Condoms are FDA approved for penile vaginal intercourse, not for toy use. Not for barrier use for genital scissoring. So if women want to use a barrier during genital scissoring, what do they do? And what are the appropriate barriers for toy use? Asking women whether they use a condom for a toy is not always appropriate. That assumes that it's maybe a phallic-shaped object, which is pretty contentious within this community to just make the assumption that these women are using phallic-shaped objects. So here's an example of different vibrators and how they look and anal beads. Can you put a condom over all of those? How? How would that work, and would it break? And these are things as public health professionals that we need to start thinking about, how women can protect themselves with these during these types of behaviors. So this is an alternative safety recommendation, and I know this is very unusual, but there's the possibility that maybe women may be better protected if they use something like a double dildo. That was the least commonly rated toy. For these women, they reported using other toys more frequently. But with a double dildo, it would keep women from sharing the toy, and it would essentially each give them their own section. So there are, of course, limitations to this sample. This sample was It was an online sample, so we don't really know who these women are. They're somebody, right? But who they are, we're not quite sure. But we know that they're a large sample. It's kind of the first of its kind. Is it the best of its kind? Yes, because it's the first, but there's still a lot more to do, right? So we can't really generalize this to other groups of women, but we do know that the rates of behavior are similar to other samples that measure things like cunnilingus. So like cunnilingus rates are similar. So this sample doesn't seem to be crazy for any particular reason that we've noted. The data was just assessed at a single time point. Women's behaviors may change over time. That was not assessed here. There were many behaviors that were not asked. We didn't ask about anal behaviors, which we regretted, but those are also behaviors that women may be engaging in that were not assessed. And we did not assess the reason for behaviors, right? So this is just what are you doing, not why are you doing it. In the future, we still have a lot of data in this WSW global data set that we're still going through and trying to digest. We're also collecting qualitative data. So some of those behaviors, we made up the definitions based upon kind of literature and talking to people, but we're actually going to begin talking with women about their sexual behaviors. Biomarkers of STIs, where right now it's just all self-report in the Women's Global Sex Study, which is what we call it. And we're also starting to investigate women's sexual behavior with women and men more thoroughly, where right now this is primarily focused on women's sex with women, and there's data on women's sex with men, but not necessarily the intersections between women's sex with women and women's sex with men. So that's our next step. These are the references for people who are wearing glasses. And thank you for, we did this in partnership with Gator Girls and the woman who provided the coupons. If you have questions, we don't have time now, but please feel free to email me. Thank you.